Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
So that we have like a defined beginning, I will introduce Kathy to everybody who already knows her even better than I do. I will particularly introduce the reason that I wanted to have Kathy with us this evening, which is, of course, as you saw, this was now almost 2 weeks ago, we got another message from San Isidro, or from Berlin in general, describing yet another crop failure. This time it was that the rains came right before the harvest. I think last year it was that the rains just never came. It has been said that climate change will bring effects that will be awful for the rich and catastrophic for the poor. And that's part of what we're seeing happen for our neighbors in El Salvador. I had not personally thought about the fact that they have to take out loans in order to afford seed to plant. And of course the loans come due regardless, whether you get a harvest or not. And then of course, everything is worse because of the pandemic. So you all know Kathy. She was our full-time mission co-worker based in Berlin. She later volunteered as an interim mission co-worker based in not Berlin. And she has continued translating letters and communicating with the pastoral team and being our connection with El Salvador. So I wanted to invite Kathy to just kind of bring us up to speed and put the immediate crisis in its context. So, okay. Kathy.
So I don't know how you want to start this. Do you want to ask specific questions or do you want me to give you some more details regarding that letter from the pastoral team maybe to start? And then if you have some questions, hopefully I'll be able to answer them, hopefully.
Yeah, why don't you start us at the letter from the pastoral team and tell us what we should know about that. Right. And then I'm sure we will have questions.
Okay, so the first letter, because we did get a follow-up letter, and that will be, it's actually been sent to our sister parish board and will go out in the minutes. So Deb will get that and share that, but I can talk to that a little bit too. But basically the first letter we got from the pastoral team was just letting us know as the churches and the people that love and support them, what they're dealing with down there. And specifically, they mentioned because of climate change, which it's a thing. And those of us in the first world that have those of us in the first world were not really affected by it. Like Nathan said, it's typically the poorest of the poor that are the ones that are going to be affected the most and the ones that are going to suffer the most. And that's a fact of life. So they basically said in that first letter that because of the rains that came at the wrong time, we're talking the rainy season back in the day when I first started in El Salvador and all the time, all the years that, since 2001 that I've been going down there, the rainy season, you could almost on your fingers count which day the rain was going to start. And that was typically the middle of May. That's when you would plant your crop, in the middle of May. And the rains would go about 6 months. And so the rains would feed and nourish all the plants that were growing. And then harvest time would come September, October, sometimes November. With climate change, it's been getting year by year, it's been getting worse and worse. Either the rains don't come until maybe August, we're talking a significant difference. And then they stay too long and they don't fall consistently. And like in this particular instance, this year, the rains came, what is this, in December when they started harvesting their corn and beans. December, normally they would be doing this in October. December, they're harvesting their corn and beans, and the rains are still coming in crazy amounts. And so, excuse me, the beans rot. They get moldy because it's so wet. The corn rots. When they double over the corn, that's part of the process of their crops. They double over the corn at a certain point in its growing time to finish drying upside down. So if it does rain a little bit, the rain just falls off the husks and the corn itself, the cob itself is fine. There's been so much rain that it even inundated the husks. So the corn is rotting. They sent a couple of pictures. They're not real clear pictures, but it's ugly. I mean, they showed rotting corn and beans that were pale green, I mean, a variety of colors, and they're supposed to be like dark red. So basically the losses were anywhere from, well, on average between 30 and 70% loss. Now at the bi-monthly meeting that they just had last Thursday at the Pastoral House, this is the first bi-monthly meeting they've had in a year. Excuse me, need some water. This is just water, it's not wine.
No.
That would be a lot of wine. So they had their first bi-monthly meeting in a year last Thursday, and that was one of the topics they discussed. And the next letter that you'll be getting, Deb, hi Deb, the next letter you'll be getting from the pastoral team is an update from that bi-monthly meeting, the topic of climate change and the losses that people experienced was discussed, among other things. There are some families that literally lost everything. There are some families that might be able to maintain their food for part of the year. But on average, it seemed like 30 to 40% harvested was the norm. So 60 to 70% loss. But there's variety there, depending upon where people's land is. One of the things the team also talked about, like Warren was concerned about, were the loans. Because yeah, a lot of families have to take out loans. And so one of the things I did, since you invited me to this, was to ask the pastoral team to give me some data, to give me some dollar amounts, what's needed to actually farm. And I know that's one of the things I liked to do with delegations, was to bring them to a farm field to talk turkey about what it costs to be a farmer. So Warren, I bet you're taking notes. So I have some data for you. So, and I asked them just to give me data for like one manzana. One manzana of land is 1.67 acre. Okay, so that gives you an idea. So for like 1.67 acres. So you have to rent the land. Hardly anybody owns their own land. The rental of land could be anywhere from $80 to $150, depending upon the owner, depending upon the location. Some areas are better than others. For one manzana, you need 4 sacks of fertilizer. Okay, typically I think most churches give 2 sacks. So that cost for fertilizer, and I'm just saying, I'm not going to factor in the church donations. I'm just going to say what that 4 sacks of fertilizer would be. And it depends on what type you use, because as most of you know, there's a pre-emergent and a post-emergent fertilizer, and they have different costs. So that, for that 4 sacks of fertilizer, it could be anywhere from $180 to $270. That's a two from, depending upon what people need for their particular plot of land.
Kathy, what rate are they?
What? Bev, what? Oh, you froze, Bev.
Bev, you can jump back in if you get unfrozen.
Yes. So I'll just keep going, and then, because I think you might have asked about interest rates. I'm wondering if that might be, and I'll get to that in just a sec, but if that's what you were asking. So they need seed to plant. So the corn seed is $60 to $80 for one manzana. The bean seed is about $180. Okay. Insecticide. Some people choose to go out and pull off all the bugs all by themselves, you know. Otherwise, they'll spend about $20 for insecticide. And for an herbicide, if people don't pick the weeds by themselves, that could be anywhere from $35 to $50. And that doesn't count the device you need, that they call it a bomba, but it's I don't know what you call it in English, but it's like a big pack you put on your back and you spray. So the poison goes on your back in one of those plastic containers, and it has a little hose and a spray. What do you call that in English? I have no idea. Anyway, so that there's that. So Warren, did you do the math? How much is that? Yeah, it's going to be, I should have done that.
No. Well, here, I got a calculator. You want me to take the low range or the high range?
Both.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll give you a minute to do that. So obviously, everybody's loan needs are going to be different. I mean, some people have more resources than others. Some people rent more land than others, so they need more of all those supplies. So my guess is, and I was given no actual dollar amounts, but my guess is anywhere from, let's be generous, $200 up to who knows what, that they need to repay. And interest rates, we lost Beverly. Interest rates, the pastoral team said, could be anywhere from 3% to 30%. Ooh. Yep. Yeah, depending upon where you get your loan. I think there are some governmental programs that will give you loans, but it's usually party affiliated. So if you're part of the FMLN, you might get a really decent interest rate. If you're just Joe Blow, you have to go to a bank or some sort of a credit loaning place. And those interest rates tend to be very high. So they have to pay that back. And if they don't pay that back, hi, Pam. If they don't pay that back, there's probably a penalty of some sort, would be my guess. Oh, and poor Bev didn't hear those answers. A penalty and interest that accumulates. So if they can't pay it off 1 year, you know, the bank or lending agency will let them hold it off, but it will be way more expensive. And then you need to borrow again for the next year's crop. So it's like a never-ending cycle that people are suffering with. And, you know, it'd be one thing, I'm taking out a loan that's been part of their lives forever. But when you could have a consistent and relatively decent crop, you're able to sell your excess produce to pay off those loans. But when you have nothing, when you have barely enough to feed yourself, well, there you are. I mean, it's obvious what the result is for that. So, yeah, it's a dire situation. I sent to Deb, I don't know if you forward, and Warren, I sent some pictures of the recent package that you guys provided for Santa Cecilia. So you hopefully, I mean, that's a huge relief. It is a huge relief to be able to provide that. And it is extremely important that you're doing it. So thank you.
And we'll share those in the Covenant Corner tomorrow, everybody. I'll get those pictures sent to Carrie in the morning or later tonight.
Yeah, good. I mean, the packets that the pastoral team puts together they're beautiful. They know what the basic needs are and they fill it with a lot of basic needs, but then they also throw in a packet of cookies or lollipops or something just to, you know, a treat for the kids. But they're pretty basic. So there's pretty much that. I think I covered what I wanted to talk about that. Do you have any questions regarding that?
Bev, well, were you-
Were you asking about?
I might have missed this, but how many acres does a typical family have?
There's no typical, really. It could be anywhere from a quarter of a manzana, which would be what, maybe two thirds of an acre? I'm not good with math. Could be anywhere from two thirds of an acre, or they could have, I've known some families to have maybe four manzanas. That's about the most I've ever heard of. Two or six.
An acre, right?
Like 7.5 acres. So yeah.
Quarter would be about 4/10.
Whoever did the math. Thank you.
Kathy, this Warren.
Hi,
I'm
Warren.
Still struggling. You say it starts with an M, is 1.67 acres. What is that again? A manzana?
Manzana, which it's kind of funny because it's the Spanish word for apple. So go figure. I don't know where that word came from.
Spell it for me, please.
M-A-N-Z-A-N-A.
Okay.
Yeah.
I did do the math per your request, and we had 6 items. A couple of them had ranges. All of them, but 4 of the 6 had ranges. So if I used the low side, those 6 items amounted to $555. If I used the high side, it was $750 for one manzana.
Right. And, you know, if they have just that, what did you say? 4/10.
4/10.
4/10 of a manzana, of like of so 4/10 of an acre. Would it? It would be.
Yeah, it'd be 4/10 of an acre. Or 4.2. Oh. You want to get real.
So those are the families that are really poor, the ones that have so little land, and that really is not enough, depending upon the size of your family, of course, to feed a family for a year. And that's the hope with the crop, is to feed your family for the year and have enough left over to sell for things like school supplies or shoes or cooking oil that you can't grow, you know, that sort of thing. And the gas, if they have a gas stove kind of thing.
The propane. Warren, what was the lowest price you came up with?
$555.
Okay, thanks.
80 rent, 180 fertilizer, 60 corn, 180 beans, insecticide 20, herbicide 35.
Yeah.
Then if you went on the high side, rent 150, fertilizer 270, seed 80, beans 180, insecticide 20, herbicide 50.
And some people choose not to buy the herbicides and insecticides. They will go out and manually pick off bugs and pull up weeds. And some people don't use as much fertilizer, which means they don't get as much of a crop. I mean, the land is so depleted. I'm sure you've heard this before, but generations and generations of overuse and abuse, the land is, it's dependent upon this specific fertilizer type. So people have often asked, well, what about organic, making your own organic fertilizer? It's a great question. In theory, it's fabulous, but it's a multi-year process and people can't afford to do that. The first year, if you go like cold turkey and switch from the fertilizer that the land is accustomed to and just go cold turkey and make it organic, you're not gonna get hardly anything. It takes several years for the land to become nutrient rich again. That's a several year process. And there's no motivation to do something like that. First of all, it's expensive to find the resources to make that organic. I mean, there's a fabulous fungus that people have used, but trying to find that specific fungus is hard, really hard in any kind of quantity. But if you take the time, even if doing a portion of your land organic and the rest with fertilizer and year by year growing the organic parts of your land, it's not your land. So if the owner of this land says, this land is worth more, you're going to have to pay more rent, or you're going to get booted off that land and he or she will rent it off to somebody who will pay a higher price. So there's no financial incentive to go organic. It's just not really feasible, and it's very sad. Yeah.
Kathy, do you have, I know in 19 years time, and like you say, generations, it goes way back before you, of course, but oh, yeah. with your familiarity, is there a way for any type of meteorologist to assist them when the rains will be coming?
They have an equivalent to an almanac, and they do listen to the meteorologists. That's one thing that I heard people were saying. They listen to the meteorologists because they do have predictions about when the rain is going to start.
Okay.
So okay. A lot like last year, not last year, but the year before. So not last summer, but the summer before. The rains weren't coming. The rains weren't coming. So people were listening to the meteorologists, and they were told roughly when the rains would start. Okay. And it more or less did start, but then it stopped. So they planted when the meteorologist said the rains were going to be starting, and you know, the season, the rainy season was going to be starting, but then the rain stopped, and then there was a drought. Was that 2 or 3 years ago? It was so bad. So
the meteorologist couldn't determine that that was going to happen, or did he not know the purpose for what they were wanting the information?
No. This is a farming community. The meteorologists know what's needed, and the farmers, gotcha. I mean, but you know, you can predict when the rain will start, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to continue.
Right.
And gotcha. Apparently that's what happened, that one really bad drought year. And there's Thank often you. Drought times. But yeah, they do have their experts that they listen to, and that they're, yeah. Yeah, they're like farmers here. This is
what is the elevation of that community?
Of San Ysidro?
Yeah.
It depends on where you are in San Ysidro. I don't know. I know it's a little bit lower than Berlin, which is, heck, it's been so long, I've forgotten how much.
Well, wherever the farmers are, whatever the community is where the farmers are, do we know that?
Well, it's in all the cantons, and they're on the mountain hillsides. You remember driving by those hillsides. You know that really pretty drive just before you make the turn off to San Ysidro, where it's just absolutely gorgeous, where you see this beautiful vista of hillside? Do you remember that?
Bruce went. I didn't
go. Oh, you didn't go. Well, Beverly, why not?
We weren't married yet.
Oh? Oh? What are they just sleeping with the ladies? It's okay. You wouldn't have had a choice, actually. Just logistics wise, not because anybody cares.
No.
Okay. So you might have seen pictures, but literally the farmland is on the mountainside. So depending upon and your acreage, your manzanaage is going to be up and down. For the most part. So you'll have a strip of land that's yours to work. And so depending upon where you happen to be standing, I mean, it could be probably, I'm not good with measurements, a span of 500 feet, would you say, Nathan? You were there. How?
It's easily probably a 150, 200 feet on a given hillside of elevation change just from the top to the bottom. And it may be more than that. Yeah. It's hard to eyeball when everything's going up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's no flat ground.
There's no machines. No machine. I mean, you couldn't have machines out there. So people do everything by hand.
Yeah.
Including the insecticides and herbicides, which I've got a lovely story for you. There's no protections when people put these poisons on their plants. When they go with the big pump, maybe that's the word. When they go to put the fertilizer on, they have a tool belt kind of thing where they stick some of the fertilizer in their belt, and then they reach in with their bare hands take a little bit out and literally put some fertilizer directly on the plant or around the plant. They don't broad spread it. It's right. specific. It's being better stewards of the amount of fertilizer they have. Right. And again, if it rains right after you apply the fertilizer, whoosh, down the hill. The insecticide and herbicides are the liquid things. There's no masks. There's no nothing. People just go out and, you know, spritz, 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 spritz. When I was near San Ysidro, I was in Casa de Zinc, which is Casa de Zacate, which is like right where that turnoff road is. And we were there visiting for some reason, I forget what. And I saw a friend come riding up on a horse. He had his little daughter, maybe a four-year-old little daughter, sitting in front of him on the horse. And I went up to reach up to shake his hand. And, you know, he's holding his little one like this on the horse. He says, oh, no, I don't want to shake your hand. His hands were just covered in the fertilizer dye. And it's like, great, you don't want to shake my hand, but you're hugging up your daughter there, you know. There's no safety measures that are in place. So, you know, we can talk about health issues as well and the lack of access to that, but the kind of things that exacerbate the illnesses that so many people have there, a lot of respiratory issues. I mean, that's that's a big part of it, the agricultural life. And the rainy season, which is moldy, the dry season, which is moldy. I mean, yeah. So it's pretty.
I got a couple of questions here back to the financing and the loans. Five of these items come from a ag supplier, probably a different company than the landlord who owns the land. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's lots of agricultural supply stores.
Are they the ones that are providing the loans on these supplies?
No, no. People get bank loans.
Okay.
The stores themselves don't have the resources to do that kind of a thing.
Does the landlord, does he deal directly with them, or do they have to borrow the rent money as well?
They either have the money to pay the rent and then they pay the landowner either directly or indirectly through a middleman, because a lot of the landowners don't live in the area. They live in San Salvador. They live in the States. A lot of the land is owned by people that are not from around there. So they have an agent for them that will collect the money or receive the money. I imagine the families have to go to Berlin or someplace to make the payment, but they either pay with cash they have or they pay from the loan they get.
Okay.
But so they pay it directly to whoever the agent is.
So all six of these items, the source of the funds for all six of those is from one lender, usually a bank.
Potentially. I mean, some people, if they have like work on the side, sometimes you can get spot jobs with the equivalent of Department of Transportation maintaining roads or something. So you might get some pay from that. You might work spot jobs with some water. You know, there's different random spot jobs you can get.
But they only are dealing with one lender. Each family is just in debt to one lender.
That I don't know. I could not honestly, I would imagine so, but I don't know for a fact. Yeah. But some people save up throughout the year from the spot jobs they have, so they might not have to take out as big of a loan.
They don't have to borrow 100% of their needs.
Right. So if they're like when coffee picking time comes, whole families go and pick coffee because it doesn't coincide with anything you have to do in the fields there. So families will go and pick coffee, and that will be cash that they need throughout the year. It's a, you know, an intense, you know, two-ish month time period where people can earn some money to save for this sort of thing. So people that are more forward thinking, and you've got some pretty smart people in that community, probably take some of their earnings and set it aside for the needs that they have for the land. Mm-hmm. So the hope is that they don't have to borrow too much. But again, okay, that's
not to beat this to death, but 100% of these families have to borrow something?
Not necessarily. I don't know. We
some
don't
of
know
them are debt free.
Possibly. Possibly. Wow. Again, it depends on
a couple families own their home, and that was unusual from what I heard when we were doing family notes.
Right.
There weren't too many that own their own home, but there are some, and those families seem to be better off. But if their crops are down, then they're not going to have as much to eat because they're still going to have to sell whatever they can, right?
Yes, but some of those better homes are people that seemingly have more resources. It's possible they have somebody in the States.
That's what we heard.
And they're sending them some money. I mean, that's a possibility. It's been so long since I've actually talked to them. Have we ever asked that question going door to door? Warren, you would know. Have we ever asked
I don't
that?
Remember. It's a wonderful question to put,
yeah,
to
it
put
is.
On there.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I remember when we were there, you pointed out a couple of homes that you were confident they had somebody in the States.
Oh, yeah.
That sounded like inside information, not like something we had asked.
Yeah, number one does. Quite certain they have older children.
And that one house where they gave us, they always give us that beautiful snack that's got beautifully tiled, that front porch, beautifully tiled inside. They've got some electronics in the house.
That's Russ and Mary's, yeah.
That's the Marshalls.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we asked them if they owned their land or rented, and almost everybody rented, but does that mean they could own their house but rent the land?
Yes, because the farmland is typically not right next to their house. So wherever they are physically living, some people own it, and there is a governmental program that's been working for years, trying to get the registration of people's homes registered appropriately in their name. Because if they don't have that paper that shows the registration, their deed registered in their name, they don't own it. I mean, prior owners could come and claim it. So there is a governmental program been working on that, but for years and years and years and years. So it's very slow. But most people, it's about a third, a third, a third. So you've got maybe a third, this is in general on the whole mountain. Maybe a third of the families own it, their little home, their little plot of land where their home is. About a third of the families rent their home and their little plot of land. And about a third of the families are squatters. There's nothing negative about squatting. It's common, 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 and typically the squatting is done with permission. The danger of that, of course, is the owner could say, yeah, bye. So anything you've built on that little plot of land, you know, if you can carry it with you, good. But if not, it stays on the land. But that's a real big generalization, but it's kind of from all of our door-to-door visits in all the different communities, it seems to be about a third, a third, a third.
Okay, just to avoid confusion here, especially for those that have not been down there, mm-hmm. we got to keep the house and the land they're farming are two completely separate entities.
Yes.
When she talked about owning their home and planting some crops or something, that'd be like a garden. It wouldn't be. But anyway, the like in Iowa, you got a set of buildings attached to the land that the guy farms. But see, down there, they're in this canton, as in a village, kind of physically close to one another. But their house is not at all connected to the land that they may be currently farming.
It's a rare thing when that happens. It happens now and again, but very rarely. Typically, a walk could be anywhere from a 5-minute walk to their field, which is lovely, or it could be an hour and a half walk just to get to your field.
So this brings up the next question. Not only do they have these from $555 to $750 operating capital for their farming operation, they've got monthly rent for their home. Is that correct?
Potentially.
The third that are renting, if you own or you're a squatter, I guess you don't have to pay.
Right.
So what would your average monthly house rent go for? Average.
I've never asked that question. So I have no idea. That'd be an interesting question. Well, no, that might be a little pushy to ask. you know, that's the sort of thing I could ask the pastoral team if they know, but to ask our families as well at the door, I don't know. That's kind of
the proceeds from their farm crops are their only source of revenue. You got to factor in their home rent in terms of annual needs. Maybe we should put it that way. We've annualized these six expenses. Would it be 25 a month, you think?
I'd say between 50 and 75, if anything. But hold on.
A month or a year?
Probably a year.
Okay. Yeah. Rent from 50 to 75 a year.
Warren, hold on. Okay, so you're saying the farming is their only source of income. That's not always true.
Okay. I'm looking at their annual cash flow. Let's put it that way. Between your home and your farming operation. You get the money is from secondary jobs and sale of your commodities. That's the two sources of revenue. But your annual, and I realize that you've got them owning different size farms. There's the big variable.
Yeah. So if you've got four manzanas, that's a hefty amount of money you're putting out. But in theory, if you can afford those four manzanas, maybe you have family in the States.
And some of those homes are just shacks. And if they have secondary jobs, where do they go? Down to the bigger cities?
There's road work. And yes, ma'am. There's road work that the city will hire out. Like if there's road work specifically in San Ysidro and the mayor's office arranges that kind of work, they will typically hire people from that area to do it. And it's probably $5 or $8 a day under the hot sun. Sometimes people, you've got the coffee season where people will earn some money. Lajeo, the geothermal plant down the road, often hires temporary temp jobs. So there's different random things. Other farmers could hire you out to work their bigger farms. So if somebody with a quarter of a manzana can possibly get a job working for the guy that has four manzanas and get $5 a day. Okay. So, I mean, there's some income to be had. Some people have a little garden, like Warren said, they might have tomatoes or cucumbers or whatever they can take to market and sell. Some people have chickens and eggs, you know, that they could potentially sell. And there's fruit trees and stuff. Granted, everybody has those kind of things, so you don't get a whole bunch, but it's, you know, there's small income sources that people have, but they're not huge.
And how is COVID affecting him right now? Do you know?
I knew you were going to ask that. So again, I did some research and a lot of people want to know that because it's an important thing. And you know how inconvenienced we are and our economy is not all that wonderful unless you're a millionaire, in which you're now a multimillionaire. We don't need to go there, but I was looking at the data on a couple of different sites. I have a resource down there that often sends, he does a blog, which I absolutely love. I'll get you that link. I think I've given it to some people, but he's called Tim's blog, and he sends out great. He's a gringo. So, I mean, he's from here, but lives there and sends out some great information. So I get some of my information from the links that he shares for actual information. So let me put on my glasses. So this was as of today. First of all, nobody, the press, nor civilians have access to the data. So whatever data is being given to the official sources, people can't, just the general Jose can't get this information typically from their own government. So according to the data today, a governmental source, the total number of cases is 56-ish thousand. Okay, this is a very small country, about one fifth the size of Iowa, with more than twice the population. Now, Iowa, as of today, had about 325,000 cases, cumulative. So that's Iowa, 325,000 cases. El Salvador, 56,000. I don't think so. Most everybody says these numbers in any developing country are underreported or just literally not known because they don't do the testing like we do.
You don't know how it's affected people in that village, do you?
Specifically San Ysidro, no, but on the mountainside, there are people that are sick, but they're not getting tested.
Oh.
So we don't know. And there have been some deaths, but I don't know if it's COVID related or otherwise. I get the impression that there have been some deaths on the mountain, but specifically from San Ysidro, I have not heard of any deaths.
Yeah.
So
don't forget, they're a community of generations living in one location.
Oh, yeah.
So
and what we hear, people don't mind wearing the masks. People are not complaining about wearing masks. And they do for the most part. And there are some restrictions about going to market. And I think they lifted that, you know, if your name starts with M, you can go on Thursday kind of thing. I think those are lifted, but they still are expected to social distance when they can and to wear their masks and to not go out as much as they can. So they're trying to do that, but
hospitals, they also have they're used to living on the land or shopping correctly. So it's ginger and garlic and onion and lots of things that they use, make tea out of to help them fight some of the side effects.
A lot of the people don't have that knowledge.
We sent them health kits. Mm-hmm. Last spring, we sent health kits containing some of the things that they might need were they to get COVID. So we tried to be proactive in that avenue from our help with our partner families.
Mm-hmm. That was a suggestion from the pastoral team that would be an appropriate gift for your families. They were very well received. There is a women's group, and they're not as big as and active as they used to be. You remember?
Mm-hmm.
Who would know that? Warren would remember that. But they still do make some stuff, some natural, holistic, natural medicines. But it's mostly just for their own community. And I don't know. I haven't asked about that. That would be an interesting thing to find out. Yeah. But
I don't think the women's group was active when your delegation went, Pam and Nathan and Anne. It seems like they had not been meeting regularly, whereas before they had been sending things back with the delegations for their families. So some people have gotten things from them.
Oh, I remember we brought a few things back.
Yeah, they sold a few products that they made. Mm-hmm. The ladies did.
Right. And that group of women has dwindled. It's still, what's her name? Solia? Is that her name? Solia?
Sounds right.
Yeah. And then I forget who the other woman is, but the two leaders of that group are still doing some random things, but it's a smaller scale than it was. Yeah.
Hot water.
So apparently, according to this, what I found out today, that sometime in February, they're going to get 16,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine aimed at healthcare workers. But keeping in mind, 16,000 doses is 8,000 people in a country of almost 7 million people. And you know there's more than 8,000 healthcare workers. But then there's also, they don't know when, there's another vaccine from AstraZeneca. Mike knew of that one. Apparently it's not as effective, but in theory, sometime soonish, they'll get 300,000 doses. And this is a country that would need 12 million doses. So that's going to be very slow. I got the impression that people, if people want the vaccine, they're going to have to pay for it. So welcome to El Salvador. Oh, do we pay for the vaccine here?
No.
Okay. Because Mike just got his first shot.
I was lucky enough to get mine today. And Walgreens has them, and it's an appointment. And my neighbor is a pharmacist, and she called and said, "We have extra, please come." So I was there. My family was unable to get it this time, but hopefully we'll hear of that next time. But I got mine, so we're feeling very lucky.
Yeah, we got ours Saturday.
And no, there was no charge. Nope. Yeah, there was no charge.
Yeah.
No, there isn't any.
That's something I think I'll want to clarify with Cecilia, if people have to pay. But I mean, realistically or practically, there's no vaccines there at the moment. So it's going to be a while before it gets out to places like Berlin, and even longer till it's available to the people in the villages. Yeah.
My understanding of the cost is that the federal government has bought the vaccine. There is a cost of administering it, and health insurance pays for that in most cases. Mm-hmm. People who are uninsured, they're just waiving.
Oh, good.
Cost.
That's good.
So it's got to be free for everybody.
Good. The joys of living in a first world country.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or the perks, shall we say?
We call them blessings. That we are living here.
Yeah.
The whims of
faith. Kathy, Deb and I were talking about education. Is there any going on? There's probably no such thing as virtual education on computers, but what is there any thought of school of any type?
Well, Marilyn, yes, there is virtual education going on.
Oh, good.
Yeah. let me put the caveat on that one. All right. So yes, all learning is online right now. There is no in-person learning happening, even K through 12. There's no in-person learning happening. That was all of last year, well, since March of last year. And the government has said this year as well. It's just online. Now, to do online, you need either a computer or a smartphone. Most people have phones. Most people have at least one phone within the family, and possibly a cheap smartphone. I mean, it's with the basics, but still being able to do the internet kind of thing. Problem with that is you've got to have access to charge your phone, for one. You have to have access to purchase internet time, and you have to have a signal. And the signal is really weak in most of the villages. You can actually get a signal in some of the villages, but it's really weak. So if you can't get a strong enough signal, you have to go someplace where there is a stronger signal. The format that the teachers are using, Deb, you're gonna love this as a teacher or an educator. They don't always use the same platforms. So the kids don't, I mean, they think they're using, for example, Google Drive or whatever their equivalent might be, but then a different teacher will require something else. So you have to then download all these apps and these abilities to use all these different programs. I'm not a computer geek, so I don't know, but it eats up a lot of your memory and it eats up a boatload of internet time. So you might be buying a month's worth of internet, but by the time all that homework has to, and the educational programs have to download and then upload, it eats up that internet time. So you maybe get 2 weeks out of that month's worth of internet. And it's, you know, it's not as expensive as it is here, but consider the income sources people have. It might as well be $1 million, you know, I mean, for a lot of families. And who is it? Was it Corozal? Cecilia was telling me there's this one student who is very dedicated to learning, and he has a desk set up outside in the street somewhere that has a better signal than his home. And he's there all day. So, and then Mike, I think it was Mike who was thinking, you know, you might have four kids from kindergarten through high school and you have one phone.
I was thinking that. Yeah.
How are you going to do your how? So there's a lot of kids that I think, I don't have numbers, but I know the numbers of scholarship students is way down. There are communities like Heartland's community. We don't have a single scholarship student. Sorry. And that's a big school.
Yeah.
Granted,
we have five. So yeah. We have five. And normally we have 14.
Yeah. So. And normally we have at least 8 or 9. But El Tablon, our community, has the high school right there that has internet. So maybe their expenses are not as bad. I don't know. But it's rough. It's hitting everybody real hard.
Thank you.
Sure. I hope that answered your question.
Yes. It's too bad. That,
woefully. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty dire. I mean, we think we're inconvenient.
Kathy, another question. Mm-hmm. Another question that's come up is we've heard and I've shared that Elmer is helping with computer access, and we've gotten videos and photos that are far better than in years past. Can you tell us who Elmer is and how he came to be doing this?
Elmer is Cecilia's son. And,
okay.
And he was lucky enough to go to a 2-year technical school where he learned computer sciences, whatever you call that program. So he learned a lot there, and he's put it in practice, and he's smart, and he's figured out a lot of other things. And I've given him some advice and say, try it this way kind of thing. And he's just good. And he's good. And he's very kind about sharing. And when he was working with Annika, it was amazing because they would do their Zoom meetings and they would, you know, he would get everybody set up at the bi-monthly meetings. The pastoral team bought themselves one of those LCD projectors, you know, those things to project whatever. Elmer sets them up for the bi-monthly meetings to do little PowerPoints, and he creates PowerPoints. I've seen one and it's like amazing. So yeah, we're very lucky to have him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Cecilia would take a picture on her phone.
Is he in his 20s?
And it would be taking a picture like this. It's like, Cecilia, I can't see it. So yes, he's early 20s.
How long is he in his 20s?
Early 20s.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been a blessing. And he's learned how to drive. So he's like a backup driver. So that's good.
How's his English speaking and writing?
Non-existent. So
I remember, didn't Cecilia have two boys that would stop by the pastoral house? And this is the older of the two?
Yes. Yeah. Marvin ended up quitting school at 9th grade, much to his mother's, shall we put it lightly, disappointment. He ended up going to a weekend school and got his high school degree that way, so he could work the fields, because he's one of the men in his family. So he could work the fields, and he got his degree just going Saturdays and Sundays, I'm not sure. But it was a 1-year intensive program that at least he did that. So that was good. Yeah, it took effort, but he did it.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm sure his mom had something to do with that. Yeah.
That's a mom thing.
She was pretty beside herself when he said he didn't want to go beyond 9th grade. It's like, oh, Marvin, what are you thinking? Anyway.
Well, you know, I'm a number cruncher. That's good or bad, I am. Just ballparking, you know, just nothing's precise, but, you know, using like 50 families and we don't know how much land they've got, and we don't know how much their house rent is. It's really hard for me to get a handle on what kind of annual revenues on average, because I think that is probably, there isn't an average. I think we got the whole gamut here.
Right, yes.
And then not knowing what outside income is available, I'm just really struggling, and I'll admit, it shocked me that we're talking about these kind of dollars. I had no idea, no idea.
That's why I wanted to get those figures for you.
And how?
I think everybody needs to know them.
One of the other themes is we try to have equal treatment to each of the 50 families, but each of the 50 families are unique in terms of their financial situation.
Right.
And back to this fairness.
I know where you're going, Warren.
Well, I don't.
Oh.
Because I just can't get any feel for what kind of dollars, and I'm talking about just right now, February of 2021. You know, let's, mm-hmm. you know, long range, I'm not even attempting that. We need to deal with the dilemma that they find themselves in now. And of course, there's other cantons besides San Ysidro, but as far as our Socios de Cristo obligation and what we might be able to do is cash. We need to inject cash, I think is the solution.
That's what's the expression? Not necessarily a good road to go down. I think the way that the pastoral team suggests with food relief is about the best thing. And I'll be brutally honest with you, Warren. The reason they don't like to give cash is because there are families who, I'm going to generalize, the man might go out and just drink it all.
Yeah, yeah.
Or gamble it off, and the family doesn't see any of it. So cash is a...
I understand.
Prickly pear.
Well, the fact that it's never happened in my involvement with the El Salvador mission stresses what you just said. We provide things, commodities, food, fertilizer,
relief,
but not X amount of cash. That's never, I think one time we accidentally slipped $5 bills into everybody's food basket, and that got quite an uproar. It was just $5, you know.
Was this when Catherine was there? Because I don't remember that.
Probably was. Anybody else remember when we slipped a $5 bill
in a while. The
food basket? And it was not.
How do they use a $5 bill?
They use U.S. dollars there.
Oh, yes. I didn't realize that. Which sorry, Warren.
Convenient.
Sorry, Warren. I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder how'd they find out? Or how did whoever find out that you got yelled at? Sorry, I'm laughing. I think it's kind of funny.
Well,
I don't remember who it was.
Obviously, it may have been with Catherine's assistance. Because I don't think the pastoral team probably would have canceled before it got that far. So it might have been with the help of a new mission coworker, i.e. Catherine, thought it was at our recommendation. But I know that the pastoral team was not happy with dispensing cash.
Yeah. And the reason I mentioned is.
Yeah. No, I believe you.
It's a valid reason. I believe you. Yeah.
Kathy, do you mind saying what your hopes and dreams are for your own involvement in El Salvador? Do you feel a call? You probably don't see a path yet.
Marilyn is not speaking on behalf of the hiring committee.
No. Yeah.
You know, if I were a younger woman, if my knees were in better shape, if I had more stamina, if my husband was retired, I think
wow.
we've actually talked about it. It would be cozy in that little teeny tiny room that I had. For just 1 week, it's cozy when I'm down there with them with the medical delegation. But, you know, we picture me doing what I would be doing, and Mike would be driving and, you know, puttering around the house and whatever he'd be doing when he's retired. But
Kathy has grandbabies now too, so she's not interested.
It's harder when, I'm doing grandma daycare right now. So I'm not going back to school right now because I don't want to be in a classroom. No. First of all, this old dog is too old to learn new tricks when it comes to all the technology that's new with this hybrid learning. And it's like, I don't want to walk into a classroom and not know what I'm doing. I mean, as a substitute teacher, you always walk into the classroom not knowing what you're doing, but you know, you figure it out. But it can't be safe. And I'm old and my husband's older and his parents are 95, for goodness sake. So we're the first line of defense for them. And I'm doing grandma daycare. So I won't risk it.
Thank you for sharing what you're thinking. And
you know, I'd love to. And if I were a younger woman, I might.
I hear you.
Because I do miss being there. And I miss being on the ground. I miss having access to all the information. I miss seeing everybody's faces. I miss crying with people. And I miss laughing with people and sharing a cup of coffee with people. And I miss that. Absolutely miss that.
So we'll find somebody. We will.
I'm hoping and hope they'll let me come down and visit now and again. Yeah. If we can ever travel again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can travel down there, but you have to have your COVID test within 72 hours of your flight. And
hello? Thank you for sharing.
My pleasure. This has been kind of fun. Sort of.
Well, it's been wonderful for us and yes. to get to hear your just depth of experience putting this moment that, you know, we've had contemporary issues classes where we just talk about COVID here, and it's hard enough to talk about COVID here, and we all live here and speak the language, and none of us do either of those for San Ysidro. So for you to be able to give us a sense of, you know, what is the situation there, and to be able to give us the background that you've been able to give us tonight, we're very, very grateful.
Well, it's been my pleasure. Now I have a suggestion for you. And this is based on something that Ankeny just recently did. They wrote a letter for their community. And the pastoral team is actually going to go out to Corozal tomorrow for something else, but they're also going to share that letter with their questions and with their expression of, we are still your partners. We're still here for you. We love you. We're praying for you. We think of you often, you know, that sort of a beautiful sentiment. Write a letter to them. I'll translate it for you. Get it to the pastoral team, and then they'll get it to San Ysidro. So if that's something that you'd want to do, I think that would be, you know, just especially now that you haven't been able to go see them, just to let them know that they're still part of your life. I think that would be a nice, nice gesture.
That would be wonderful. And you know, we forget that you have landed on a more efficient means of communicating back and forth with the pastoral team. So, you know, letters have crossed our minds from time to time, but then nobody's traveling. They can't take the letters down for us. Right.
But one big generic letter that can be read at a general assembly meeting would be lovely.
That would be great.
Just to let them know that they're not forgotten. In fact, I might suggest that
we can share that at tomorrow's OSP meeting.
Yeah, and have everybody do it.
Share that at tomorrow's OSP meeting so all the communities can receive something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good idea, Deb.
Yeah.
Back to one of the basic principles of, we usually wait for a solicitude from the directiva and the canton, as opposed to us trying to figure out what they need.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's a, I'm saying that's a good procedure.
Right.
But at this point, that that last letter was just a kind of an informality, bringing us up to date, but didn't have a solicitude.
No, no. That letter came from the pastoral team, not your community. That came from the team itself, just to get all of us a sense of what's going on. And there was no solicitude attached. Now, like with fertilizer, you got that solicitude September or October, I forget when. They're still able to get that kind of information to us. They if they have a solicitude for something specific, they will bring it to the pastoral house, and the pastoral house will pass it to me, and then I will pass it to you. So they're still able, they know that they're able to communicate in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would be surprised that we're not getting a solicitude for seed of the, you know, if we can't pay cash rent to the landlord.
Right.
You've got your fertilizer, your seed, and I don't want to get into insecticide and herbicide, but there are big items, your bean seed and your corn seed.
My guess is they don't want to overtax you because you're already giving them two big sacks of fertilizer. And I don't know that, everybody buys the same type seed. I know there's some.
We can let them know that in the letter we write to them. So
maybe I wouldn't put anything specific in your letter. I'm just trying to think how to word it relatively generically, inviting them to prioritize any needs they might have as a community.
You said that they generally need more fertilizer than two bags. Is it possible that we could give them more, you know, three or four bags instead of just two?
There are a lot of families that don't have a full manzana. So that would be like redundant or in excess. And one of the rules about receiving a gift is you are not to sell it. Because if you sell a gift like a water tank or something like that, then you're off the list. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're very persnickety about that particular rule because they've been burned before. Churches have been burned before. And, you know, they might sell that $45 sack of fertilizer for $5. And, you know, it's not smart. You know, I think the two sacks of fertilizer is good. I know it's not enough for everybody, for everybody's farms, everybody's needs. That's a good sound, baby. it's hard to know exactly. I mean, the pastoral team is the one that often makes suggestions about what is an appropriate gift. And I kind of trust their expertise and their wisdom and, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but having lived with them for so long.
But you're saying there's no standardization to the corn seed and the bean seed like there is to the fertilizer needs.
Again, the amount of seed they get depends on how much land they have.
Well, if we're doing minimum purchase on fertilizer, there must be some kind of a minimum purchase of seed.
Yeah. Now, some people, when they're lucky and have harvested enough, also have like a seed bank in their home where they will hold back seed. So again, not everybody might need seeds. So I don't know why.
You know, I just probing here.
Yeah.
But if you take no direct cash injections off the table.
Thank you.
I don't see how we're going to assist them. Is it just food basket about every 90 days? Is that what we can do?
It's not a bad idea if you're able to. If you're financially able to.
Well, I don't see anything else that we're able to support financially. If the seed's off, I'm not too hip on this insecticide herbicide thing.
Yeah.
And the landlord's rent, if that's off the table.
Yeah.
We don't have a whole lot of others. At least I'm not identifying other ways to assist them, especially when they're not willing to send us a solicitude. We're back to we trying to guess what they need as opposed to them telling us what they definitely right. need.
Now, one of the benefits of a food relief basket, like you do, is that is money that they don't have to spend in town. Mm-hmm. And I imagine people, especially like Wilfredo or Nelson, or, you know, lots of people in that community, if they don't have to spend it in the marketplace, hopefully they tuck it away for when their agricultural needs come
okay.
up.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, there is a financial benefit to yeah. the food baskets. Yeah.
So could we do those more often?
You could do them as often as you wanted to, I'm thinking, but I don't know. Who was it, you, Warren, that said every 90 days? Somebody said every 90 days.
I just threw out 90 days. Just
yeah, quarterly kind of thing. Maybe. Yeah.
Well, those of us that have assembled them and delivered them, that is no small task. Trust me.
And I would suggest that at least once a year, if you do several of those, at least once a year, say, pastoral team, make one for yourselves.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have any
objection. Just a thought.
Especially now that we're not providing any of the labor or any of it's all done by the pastoral team.
Yes. Yeah.
And like I said,
I know they get to pack it all, to weigh it all, to measure it all, to bag it all, to deliver it all. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'd say we could give them one every time we do it.
Well, that would be lovely. Or maybe every other time. If you do it four times a year, every other time would be lovely. Oh, what the heck, every time.
Well, yeah, whoever is involved in that distribution is entitled to a basket for themselves, you know, because I can't imagine that you have identical pastoral team doing every distribution. But whoever is involved in it that particular time, they get one. I agree.
Gloria, Blanca, Idalia, Margarita, Elmer, Alejandro, those would be the ones that do it.
There again, are we
pretty much every time.
Are we sensitive enough of where we do draw the line on those five you named? Is there a sixth that might feel left out or a seventh person?
No, those would be the ones that would do it.
As long as it's pretty crisp.
It's pretty crisp.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
so we send them
not everybody though
buy the supplies to send.
It's not the entire pastoral team, Deb.
Okay.
But like Belmore and Jesus, they're not often at the past. They're pretty much there at the bi-monthly meetings.
Okay.
To do those kind of things, and if they need advice, if they need a consensus, if they need something like that, but okay. The ones that are actually doing the physical work, mm-hmm. the day-to-day physical work, are the ones I just mentioned.
It's not like the UPS truck that pulls up by my home and pops in and out and goes on down the road. If you remember some of those deliveries, and that was in dry weather, leave alone throwing a little moisture, or did we? Well, I think Bruce and we got rained on. You're muted, Bruce.
So we send the money to the.
That might be the best thing for Bruce.
To buy the supplies.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
I love
her,
so you know.
Oh boy, we got torrential rain riding in the back of a pickup truck and going down the highway. It was memorable, yeah.
And I discovered that I did not have rain gear. It was a windbreaker. And it did not come back to the U.S. with me. All of a sudden, I'm feeling awful damp. And I thought, well, this is rain gear. Well, it was a windbreaker. Big difference. But back to Pam's question, Sue just recently forwarded a check to our sister parish. I think it was $7,200. Remember, we had fertilizer, $3,500, $1,200 for scholarships, and $2,500 for $50 food baskets. See, those funds are forwarded to the pastoral team.
And they already have it.
Yeah, and then and we have pictures of them assembling the baskets. Yeah, we just recently had a check sent to the our sister parish, and then they've got it on down to Berlin. So they've got the money. We have Covenant / Socios de Cristo committee has a. I tried to explain this to Pam another time. Accounts down there.
Yeah.
Right. And we have added more to those, like Kathy, as of January 12th, provided us with the balances in those three. General fund, education, so like education was down to 200, physically in El Salvador. So we sent another 1,200 down. The health account was 735. And then much to my surprise, they're showing general funds of 2969. So even though we expected to spend $5,000 on fertilizer, we only sent $3,500 because we think there's some funds already down there. The additional $1,500, if you will, is already physically in El Salvador. More than you wanted to know, I know.
It's good the way you do it, though, because you're proactive. So the pastoral team doesn't have to say, Kathy, are they going to send money?
Well, like, I don't blame them. They need the money physically in hand
to be able to make your purchases.
To know, yes, yeah. That's only fair.
Yeah, sometimes churches forget. Oh, yeah, school's going to start. We need to send some money for scholarships. Oh, yeah, that's normal.
At our Socios de Cristo meetings, though, we have our current treasurer, our former treasurer, and the Socios de Cristo treasurer all there at the same meeting. So
we are
on top of it.
You are awesome. At Fort Heartland, we can't read those darned budget reports.
That's called being all over it, not just on top.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Kathy?
So next time we're able to go down to El Salvador, who all's going to come with me? What?
Remember your knees and your age?
Well, I'll go down for a week.
We do have people that are ready to travel, though, but none of them have done it before. So it'll be a new delegation group.
Yeah, so they I was planning on the delegation last... for last June or whenever we had ended up penciling in a date.
July. And we had a group. So that group is still wondering and waiting. So we've got people ready.
We're all wondering and waiting.
What's the corona situation down there?
Oh, we went through that.
You missed it. You missed it, Ruth.
In a nutshell, underreported and underserved. Basically, in a country of 7 million people-ish, they have listed on their website that there are 56,000 cases.
No way.
And less than 2,000 dead. And at this point, no vaccines yet. So that's the nutshell, Bruce.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was on a Zoom magic meeting.
I'm sorry, we missed that.
I disappeared.
That was the finale.
Well, I think it's only fair we tell him that he is now the mission co-worker for the next 2 years. We signed you up.
Hone up on your Spanish.
Beverly said, of course, sign him up for 2 years. I'll help you back, Bruce.
I'll only go down with you. I want you to be my bunkmate again.
Oh, and Warren and Bruce, that piece of plywood?
Yeah.
Under the bed? It's still
on
there.
On the bed?
Still there.
Not on the bed. It's actually standing up in the upstairs dormitory, or it was last time I was there. So yeah.
Well, they replaced the beds. Some church replaced the beds.
That was Central Presbyterian Church. Thank you.
Yay. Well, good work.
To the rest of the people, Bruce did some artwork on this 4x8 piece of plywood. It's not just a blank board. Bruce is very artistic
very clever.
It was PG-14 rated. It wasn't anything that was.
And why did we need the plywood?
Because the mattresses were like.
You were almost on the floor. The sag in that bed of yours was you, and I felt bad. So I says, let's do something. I think Kathy suggested it.
I slept like a U.
You were in a hammock.
Cozy.
Okay, another, just a follow-up. Are these $50 baskets, is that a good level in terms of the physical amount of stuff to haul and as opposed to...
they wouldn't be able to pick them up.
Yeah. That 50 is about a good max per basket.
Between 40 and 50 is a beautiful basket.
Okay.
Yeah, because not only is it foodstuffs, it's like laundry detergent and you know, kitchen soaps and toilet paper and, you know.
The pictures today showed some other non-edible items.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to back up when I said we should give the workers a bag every time. I was thinking of one bag for the pastoral house. I wasn't thinking of one for every individual.
Yeah.
We could do both.
Right. Pastoral house does okay. Well. This has been good for my soul. This has been good for my soul.
Thank you.
Yeah, it amazes me that of all the things you need to have a successful delegation, we've got the mission co-worker who has volunteered. We've got, Deb says we have people interested in going. We've got the funds to support them. We just have COVID. We just have to get rid of COVID. You know, there's always some big hurdle, but we're more than halfway there.
I'm hoping.
That's Make right. sure they're halfway with you on the COVID side.
It can't just be our side. It's got to be in El Salvador too, under control. And
right. That'll be a whole other piece of the decision process that we haven't even had to look at that bridge, let alone cross it, because it's not safe from here to travel. But then, what will it be like? How long will it take to be safe to travel to there?
We actually have a delegation on the docket for spring break, but that won't happen. I'm sure.
Wow.
Yeah. And they penciled it in, but they hopeful, but.
Well, thanks for staying so optimistic and ever willing. This is good. Good news.
That's right.
Just one more quick comment before we lose her. I was a little surprised at your comment, Kathy, that our San Isidro Directiva sensed that maybe they were asking too much of the West Des Moines group. And I think the way I'd like to have you maybe subtly get to them, we have turned down solicitudes in the past. But we welcome their sending a solicitude, getting back to that way we know precisely what they need.
Okay.
Not that we can approve or fight. One of them, they wanted us to, I think, finance a doctor.
Right.
Remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I don't want them to be apprehensive that or prejudge that we're being.
We'll assume.
And we don't hesitate to turn them down if we, for whatever reason.
So here's a thought. I'm assuming that one of you is going to write a letter.
It'll get written. Yes, I'm sure.
Okay. So write the letter. Send it to me. I can make suggestions. Mm-hmm. We'll bounce it back and forth a few times.
Mm-hmm.
To hear how it reads, to hear how the request for you know, prioritizing their needs kind of thing. And we'll, Warren, I hear what you're saying. And I think, yeah, I think it's okay to find some gentle way to say, we hope you're okay. You know, it's more difficult to get solicitude since we can't talk face to face. What are the priorities in your community, maybe? Yeah. And that's okay to ask what their priorities and what their needs as a community are.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to help bounce back and forth with whoever's going to do the writing.
We appreciate your insight on the wording of the letter and just in your general conversation with the pastoral team. There may be opportunities. Well, you know, I think you're maybe off in terms of how Covenant in West Des Moines is going to react to this solicitude. You know, it makes me think of a youngster who thought dad would turn him down and never even gave dad a chance to cooperate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my wife, bless her heart, would said, Mike really kind of wants to talk about this, but he's prejudging that I'm going to maybe not agree with it. See, and so I kind of always felt bad that I didn't have that exchange. And there again, you know, being parents, whatever, even if you can provide what they're asking for doesn't mean that you always need to, you know, I can't think that it's more, there's some judgment in there, I guess. Mm-hmm. And, but when you look at the needs, which are just everywhere down there, there's no problem with these are genuine qualified requests.
Right.
When they do come forth. Now the one for the doctor that kind of threw me. They wanted us to pay the salary of a doctor for a year in their new clinic.
I don't know.
Do they need a magic show?
I'd love a magic show. And I love going to San Ysidro.
Well,
one of my favorite
kind of shows. Just kind of shows, Kathy.
It's a pretty awesome place.
Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.